Right, I think the recorder is now switched on, so we can begin our second Bible study on the topic of the healing miracles of Jesus Christ. The healing miracles of Jesus Christ. We began this last week, laid the introduction, and got as far as looking at two of the specific healing miracles that Jesus carried out. I think we saw last week that there were a number of places where it talks of Jesus healing all who were sick of various illnesses and diseases. And in a number of places we read that Jesus healed all, that great multitudes came, the lame, the demon-possessed, the blind, and Jesus healed them all. But there are about between 15, maybe 20 individual specific healing miracles, and we want to look at those in more detail to be open to what God can show us, what we can learn about Jesus, how people came to him, how he responded to them. And obviously we're trying to understand more about living by faith, enjoying the benefits that God makes available to us, one of which is healing. And of course we can see Jesus the Messiah in action. The Gospels describe Jesus. We don't have the benefit today of a video or a DVD. We cannot see Jesus walking about, sitting down, talking to people, and so on. But we do have four Gospel accounts, and they describe between them pretty much what Jesus said and did. And hence, we can get to know Jesus better. And as we saw last week, when we see Jesus in operation, it's tantamount to seeing God the Father, because Jesus and the Father operate as one. They're not in opposition. If we see Jesus, hear what he taught, see what he did, we know the Father would have done the same things had he swapped places with Jesus. It wasn't that God the Father was some vindictive, harsh God of the Old Testament out to punish people, and Jesus was somehow teaching different. Jesus and the Father are, in that sense, of one mind. Let's start in a fairly common place now, Romans chapter 10, because one of the reasons for reading the scriptures is that we might develop and grow in faith. Romans chapter 10, and we'll be reading verses 13 through 17. This is a passage we should be quite familiar with now, but for all that, it's an important passage. We often have a desire to develop faith, grow in faith, walk in faith. Well, there's a key to possessing faith, and this is one of the big keys. So beginning in verse 13, Romans chapter 10, "For whoever calls upon the name of the Eternal shall be saved," or we could say shall be healed, the same word is used very often. "But how then shall they call on him in whom they have not believed?" Obviously, you're not going to call out for someone you don't have any confidence in or any faith in or don't believe in. "How shall they believe in him of whom they have not even heard?" Answer is, of course, you wouldn't. "And how shall they hear without a preacher?" You know, someone has to bring the message of healing or salvation or whatever it might be. "And how shall they preach unless they are sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who preach the gospel of peace, who bring glad tidings of good things." And certainly healing is a glad tiding of a good thing. If you are sick or ill or infirm, the good news that Jesus is healer and the Father's will is to heal is pretty much good news, glad tidings. Verse 17, Paul concludes, "So then faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God." And we said before that faith comes by hearing, and hearing, and hearing, and hearing by the word of God, because you can't just hear it once. We are very worldly people. I don't mean the sense that we're necessarily out Friday nights at the casino, gambling away our week's earnings, but we are people who are flesh and blood. We are in a physical world. We are very much influenced by what we see, what we hear, how we feel. We wake up in the morning, sometimes we feel pretty depressed. down in the dumps, and the fact that God is still as good as he was the day before, somehow we're just influenced by our feelings. But if we want to grow in faith, there is a source, and it says here, faith comes by hearing the word of God, and we hear it and hear it and hear it often enough and long enough till it actually renews our mind and our thinking. And so part of the reason for this Bible study is to look at Jesus as healer, to give us that deeper awareness, understanding of what the Word of God teaches us, and help us to grow in faith. Let's turn to John chapter 4. Just refresh once again that Jesus and the Father are not at cross purposes. John chapter 4. I think I've got three scriptures on this topic. We won't dwell on them. Try and save a wee bit of time. But John chapter 4 and verse 34. Some cynics around. I think I'm going to dawdle, but I'm going to press on at a rapid pace. John chapter 4, verse 34. Jesus is explaining to his disciples and so on. He says, verse 34, "My food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work." You know, Jesus did not come on a frolic of his own. When the Father sent him, Jesus came and did precisely what the Father wanted. And Jesus exemplified the Father. If you saw Jesus, you in a sense saw the Father, because their approach was the same, their attitude was the same, their love and compassion for mankind was the same. Jesus came to do the will of him who sent him. When Jesus responded to people's needs, for example in the area of healing and so on, it was just as if the Father would have done it. John chapter 5 and verse 30. John 5 verse 30, Jesus says, "I can of myself do nothing. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is righteous, because I do not seek my own will, but the will of the Father who sent me." You know, Jesus wasn't off doing things that were of interest to him and ignoring the Father. Jesus was endeavoring his entire life to please the Father, to do those things that would delight his Father, and of course to represent his Father. We see that finally in John chapter 14, verses 7 through 11, which we did cover last week. John 14, verses 7 through 11. Verse 7, "If you had known me," says Jesus, "you would have known my Father also." If you know me, you know the Father, because, you know, we're like two peas in a pod. We share the same outlook and approach. "From now on, you know him and have seen him." And Philip said to Jesus, "Lord, show us the Father, and it is sufficient for us." Go on in, Jesus. You know, show us the Father. We really, really would like to see the Father. It would be so special to see the Father. And of course it would be. But Jesus said to him, verse 9, "Have I been with you so long, and yet you have not known me, Philip? He who has seen me has seen the Father. So how can you say, 'Show us the Father'? If you've seen me, you know what God the Father is like. You've seen me do miracles, that's what he would do. You've seen me feeding thousands, that's what he would do. You've seen me preaching the truth, that's what he would do. If you've seen me in operation, you know the Father." Verse 10, "Do you not believe that I am in the Father and the Father in me? The words that I speak to you, I do not speak on my own authority, but the Father who dwells in me does the works. Believe me that I am in the Father and the Father in me, or else believe me for the sake of the works themselves." So the Father was in Jesus. The Father was actually the power doing the works. And so when we see Jesus, and anything Jesus said or did or demonstrated, we know the Father has exactly the same mind. Now last week we got to look at two specific miracles that are between 15 and 20, depending on how you count. And some miracles, you can't always tell if it's the same one being described differently by Mark and Luke, for example, or whether it's two separate miracles. But last week we looked at, first of all, the leper, whom Luke said was full of leprosy, and he came to Jesus and said, "Lord, I know you could heal me. I know you have the power to heal me, but I'm not sure if you will heal me. I don't know if it's your will." And Jesus said, "It is my will. I am willing, be healed." And we spent some time on that, showing that the scriptures show us repeatedly, again and again, and today's will show the same story, that it is God's will to heal. Jesus was always willing to heal. And Jesus is the same yesterday, and today, and thank God will be forever. And then the second example we looked at was the paralyzed man whose four friends brought him on a sort of a little bed and couldn't get to Jesus because Jesus was preaching in a house, probably his own home. And so to get to Jesus, rather than going back home and saying, "Well, I guess it wasn't God's will, you know, I'm sorry, Joe, but you can see we tried, but if it was God's will, you know, angels would have moved people aside and we'd have a red carpet would have appeared and we'd have gone straight in front of Jesus, but I guess it's just as a sign that it's not God's will for you to be healed." No, they had an outcome in mind. They wanted their friend to be healed. And so they took the guy up on the roof, knocked a hole in the roof, got the old sledgehammers out, banged a big hole, lowered their friend through, and Jesus, it said, saw their faith. Because faith generally has corresponding actions or works. And Jesus saw their faith and he said, "I'm going to forgive your sins, your physical sins. Now stand up and walk." And we covered that last week as well. So let's move on now to another example, which is a blind man who is healed. We'll turn to Luke chapter 18 first of all. And then we'll be turning to Mark, which is a parallel passage. Luke 18. Luke chapter 18, starting in verse 35. And as we go through these various miracles, we'll be reading them in the various places they appear, Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, together, the whole story. Sometimes, you know, one writer gives you some of the details. Sometimes another writer gives you similar but sometimes different details. Occasionally people point to difference and say, "Well, that's a contradiction, so the Bible's not inspired." But by and large, if you put them side by side, you can see the whole story, and they aren't contradictory. They're just giving you different insights, different angle, different approach, but the whole thing put together gives you the whole three-dimensional story. Luke 18, starting in verse 35. "Then it happened that as he was coming near Jericho, that a certain blind man sat by the road begging." Which I'm pretty sure in those days, if you were a blind man, that's probably the best you could do. Certainly when you're blind, you're not going to be working industriously as a fisherman on the Sea of Galilee. You're not going to be a builder, you know, up on a roof, you know, putting roofing tiles down. You're not going to be a man working, making garments in a textile shop, are you? You're blind. And so he's sitting at the side of the road just begging. He's got, I guess, a cup out there or his hat or something, and occasionally asking people to go by to, you know, please toss in a coin. So, in a bad way, really. "And hearing a multitude passing by, he asked what it meant." You know, perhaps it was unusual to get large numbers of people talking and shouting and laughing and so on, and obviously blind, he can hear it, and he said, "Well, what's going on?" So they told him that Jesus of Nazareth was passing by. "And he cried out saying, 'Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me.'" Now obviously he knew something about Jesus of Nazareth. He'd perhaps never been able to go find Jesus in the past because he's blind and perhaps nobody would take him. But he knows Jesus can do something, because he shouts out, cries out, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." So we know that faith comes by hearing. He'd obviously heard somewhat of Jesus' healing miracles. And he shouts, "Jesus, son of David." And that alone gives the game away that he had a considerable amount of faith, because the term Son of David had meaning among the Jewish people of that day. Jesus himself normally referred to himself as the Son of Man. But Son of David was something special. If we hold our place there with our $50 bill, and for inflation, I suppose it should be a $100 bill now. Jeremiah 23, book of Jeremiah 23, and starting in verse 5, reading verses 5 and 6. Behold, the days are coming, says Eternal, that I will raise to David a branch of righteousness. This was a prophecy and was, I guess, reasonably well known to many of the Jews in Jesus' day. I will raise to David a branch of righteousness. A king shall reign and prosper and execute judgment and righteousness in the earth. In his days Judah will be saved and Israel will dwell safely. Now this is his name by which he will be called, the Lord our righteousness. So the Son of David was an expression that really indicated that you believed the individual was in fact the prophesied Messiah. If we go back to Luke 18, so I think we can probably take it that this blind man had enough knowledge of the scriptures and what he'd heard about Jesus, that faith had arisen in his heart that this was the Son of David. And that was a title, not just a sort of throwaway compliment to this individual. It was, well, this is the Son of David. This is the man prophesied. This is the Messiah. This is the man who's going to restore the kingdom to Israel. And so he shouts out, have mercy on me. Verse 39, then those who went before warned him that he should be quiet. Not quite sure why they would do that, but I guess they just said, you know, be quiet, you know. But he cried out all the more, Son of David, have mercy on me. And they cried out all the more, I think in some translations it says, screamed and shrieked. I think that's what the Amplified puts it. So, you know, Messiah, Messiah, have mercy on me. And they say, be quiet, be quiet. And he screams and hollers and shouts and shrieks, because he's got a desire. And he's taking action. He's not just going to say, well, I guess if it was God's will to heal me, I guess Jesus would stop and he'd wander across, because in his spirit he would see me here, and Jesus would reach down and he would put his hands on me and he would give me sight, and since he hasn't, I guess it's just not God's will. You know, he took action. I'm going to be noticed. And he shouts and shouts and shouts, and it has an effect, because verse 40, Jesus stood still and commanded him to be brought to him. Because I guess he couldn't get there himself. He's blind, doesn't quite know where Jesus is. And when he had come near, Jesus asked him, saying, what do you want me to do for you? And he said, Lord, that I may receive my sight. Interesting, Jesus said, well, what do you want, man? You'd think it pretty obvious, the guy's being helped along by some passers-by, and he's obviously, sort of stumbling a bit, and maybe he's got a white stick or something. And Jesus says, well, what do you want? It's not obvious what he wants, but Jesus wants him to ask. It's courteous to ask Jesus if you want something, or to ask the Father. We don't want to just necessarily expect the Father of Jesus to do things just because we need them. It does say many times, ask, seek, knock. And so Jesus says, what do you want me to do for you? And perhaps in some ways it's not that surprising a question, because there are occasionally individuals, perhaps or have come across, I know it's a very small number, who in many ways actually they get a sort of strange pleasure or gratification for being ill. Which, I would hate to be ill. I've thankfully not had many instances in my life, but to be sort of handicapped in some way, lacking energy or unable to move about, would be totally frustrating for me. But some people, I think they relish the attention. Nothing they like better than spending 3 hours telling you about their ailments and their operations and their drugs and all the rest of it. And if they're poorly, and how are you today? Oh, I'm just so bad. It's been a bad week for me. Really? What's up? Well, last week the back went, and then a week later the ankle went, and I'm on these new drugs they've got, and a new hormone treatment, and you do wonder, some people actually get so much pleasure from their illness that the last thing they'd want is to be healed. But anyway, Jesus says to this man here, "What do you want me to do for you?" And he said, "Lord, that I may receive my sight." And Jesus said to him, "Receive your sight. Your faith has saved you." And you can translate that, "Your faith has healed you." And immediately he received his sight and, not surprisingly, followed Jesus, glorifying God. And all the people, when they saw it, gave praise to God. So Jesus, interestingly, said to the man, "Your faith has saved you." You know, which is pretty good. Faith was important to Jesus. I think we know that from a number of instances. And he certainly points out here, you know, "Man, your faith has saved you." If we turn now to Mark chapter 10. Mark chapter 10. And in verse 46. Mark chapter 10 and verse 46. We can read the version that Mark gives us, adds one or two more details, and refreshes our understanding. Mark chapter 10, verse 46. "Then they came to Jericho, and as he went out of Jericho with his disciples and a great multitude, blind Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, sat by the road begging." So Mark tells us here the name of the individual. Previously it was a certain blind man. We now see his name was Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus. I guess that's Bartholomew in our modern day tongue. So here's poor old blind Bartholomew sitting by the road. Interestingly, it says here this happened when they went out of Jericho. And Luke's version says as they were coming into Jericho. Ah, contradiction. The Bible is not inspired and we can throw it away. Well, that's what some people would like to say. According to the commentaries, there were in fact two towns of Jericho, about 2 or 3 miles apart. The Jericho based where the old Jericho where the walls came tumbling down was, and a more modern new town of Jericho that Herod had constructed. This was obviously between the two. You leave one, head to the other. Verse 47, "When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, 'Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me.'" Again, son of David demonstrates that Bartimaeus believed this was a very special individual. This was the prophesied Messiah. Verse 48, "Then many warned him to be quiet, but he cried out all the more, 'Son of David, have mercy on me.'" And if we were there, we'd have seen him, you know, perhaps shaking his stick up and down and bellowing at the top of his voice. "You're not going to ignore me. You know, I want attention." So Jesus stood still. And I guess the shouting, you could say, was a cry of faith. And, you know, faith does catch Jesus' attention, particularly since there's so little of it. So I guess the shout of faith here, Jesus stopped. Oh, I can hear faith. I can hear faith. And he stopped. And stopped still and commanded him to be called. Then they called the blind man, saying, "Be of good cheer. Rise. He is calling you." And throwing aside his garment, he rose and came to Jesus. Now, I don't know if it's true or not, but some of the so-called experts say that the garment was a sort of an indication of your rank and so on, and that a blind person who was authorized to beg would have a garment that sort of displayed that and made it clear that you were a blind person and that you were allowed to beg and so on. And so if that was the case, then by throwing aside his garment, it was again a statement of faith. "I won't need this again. You know, toss it away. I'm finished with being blind. Don't need a garment of blindness." And he just tossed it away, rose and came to Jesus. And Jesus answered and said to him, "What do you want me to do for you? What's your request? Speak up, let me know." Now there are times, and I think some of the miracles we look at, Jesus took the initiative. He would go up to some person who was ill and of his own volition just heal them. Those were a minority of occasions, and there'd be good reasons for them. not always explained in Scripture as to why Jesus did these things, but he'd be led of the Spirit, led by God to do this. But most of the time, routinely, it was people who came to Jesus and asked. And then Jesus, being the man he was and is today, responded because of his goodness, his compassion, his care. And you and I mean, we might want to wait for Jesus to come to us someday and do a miracle for us. But if we're just waiting for him to take the initiative, we could be waiting a very long time. It didn't happen that often. But if we come to Jesus, if we come to God the Father, that's far better. We can take the initiative. As we'll see again and again in these miracles, most people, most of the time, took the initiative, as Bartimaeus did. What would happen, do you think, if he had not shouted out? If he'd sat there and heard all this crowd going by and just said to somebody, "Well, what's this all about? Oh, it's Jesus going by. I wish I could see and follow after and hear that man, but I guess that's just not God's will, and go back to his begging." I don't think Jesus would have turned aside and sought him out to heal him. So was it God's will for blind Bartimaeus to receive his sight? Yes. But the man had to take action, and he did. So he said, "Rabboni, that I may receive my sight." And the Greek implies receive again my sight, recover my sight. So that implies that perhaps in earlier life Bartimaeus had been able to see, but somehow had lost his sight over the years, an accident or disease or whatever it might be. So he said, "Please, Rabboni, a great master, I would like to recover my sight again." And Jesus said to him, "Go your way, your faith has made you well." And immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus on the road. He could well have followed Jesus for the next few years and the rest of his life, hopefully. But Jesus said there, "Your faith has made you well." The man clearly had faith, demonstrated it, and Jesus responds to faith. Okay, let's turn now to another miracle. Matthew chapter 9 will begin. This is the lady with the issue of blood. It's repeated in three, Matthew, Luke, and Mark. So Matthew chapter 9 to begin with. You could write down the lady with the hemorrhage, but since that's a difficult word to spell properly, lady with the issue of blood might be a bit easier. This is in the middle of another miracle taking place, which we'll come to another time. So this particular one is the lady with the issue of blood. Matthew 9, verses 20 to 22. And suddenly, as certain things were happening, a woman who had a flow of blood for 12 years came from behind and touched the hem of his garment. For she said to herself, "If only I may touch his garment, I shall be made well." But Jesus turned around when he saw her. He said, "Be of good cheer, daughter. Your faith has made you well." And the woman was well, made well from that hour. That's quite a short account in Matthew, and Matthew seems to often almost sort of telescope events and just hits the high points. That will be evident from one or two other places we turn to. There's only the three verses there, 20, 21, and 22, but we can get more detail elsewhere. So we turn to Luke chapter 8. We get much more detail, and then Mark fills in some more as well. It's a bit strange that Matthew... quite a long gospel, 28 old chapters, but some of the miracles he barely touches on one or two of the key points and then sort of moves on to something else. Luke chapter 8 and verse 43. Verse 43, "Now a woman having a flow of blood for 12 years, who had spent all her livelihood on physicians and could not be healed by any." And this is that's quite a serious complaint. Being ill for 12 days would not be pleasant to have a problem. I guess only women would understand this type of problem, as men would struggle a wee bit. But for women to be plagued for 12 years of her life, it's a long time. and would have no doubt weakened her in many ways, being quite distressing for her. I think in that particular culture, loss of blood would have made you ceremonially unclean and all sorts of implications for your life. And 12 years, and she'd been trying to do something about it. It says here that she spent entire livelihood on physicians and could not be healed by any, because there's a great number of things physicians cannot heal you of. And in fact, many people say that they cause more harm than they do good. In this particular case, she was now broke. She had nothing left, and they couldn't do anything for her. And she came from behind and touched the border of Jesus' garment. And we know from Matthew that she said, if I can just touch his garment, I will be healed. Which is a statement of faith. Well, the action itself is a statement of faith. She could have stayed in her little apartment and said, well, I've got this horrible ailment, and it means I can't mix with people, I'm ceremonially unclean, I'm continually weak, it's an embarrassing complaint, my life has been handicapped for 12 long years now, but I guess if it's God's will, I guess he'll send Jesus to me, and he'll knock at the door and say, are you the lady with the issue of blood? I've come to heal you. But she didn't rely on that, and equally, had she stayed there in her apartment and taken no action, she would have got worse and worse, and one imagines would have died in another year or two or three or four. But she took action. She didn't just be passive and lie back. And in many ways, it's important to realize that, you can have an aggressive faith or an assertive faith. Go to God in faith and say, God, this is your word. These are your promises. Jesus, you've done all this. Now I'm looking to you, please, to deliver. I'm going to stand in faith until you do. Be bold. Come boldly to the throne of grace to receive help in time of need. So she came from behind, verse 44, touched the border of his garment, and immediately her flow of blood stopped, which would have been a huge relief. And Jesus said, who touched me? And when all denied it, and I guess that includes her as well, so she had faith, but she was a bit nervous, a bit frightened perhaps, to be sort of caught out. I guess she thought she could just touch his garment, be healed, and scamper off again. But Jesus knew something had happened. It appears he didn't know who had been the recipient of this healing power. But Jesus said, well, hang on, who's touched me there? And all denied it. Peter and those with him said, Master, the multitudes throng you and press you, and you're asking, who touched me? What's the matter? In the last half hour alone, Jesus, I've had my foot stood on at least 500 times. Everybody's crushing and banging and bumping. There's elbows everywhere. My rib cage is bruised black and blue. What do you mean, who touched you? But Jesus said, verse 46, somebody touched me, for I perceived power going out from me. And you see, Jesus wasn't even, if you like, the active agent here. Wasn't Jesus' faith in operation? Wasn't Jesus speaking words of faith? Jesus was busy making his way to another assignment. And yet, Jesus is such a healer, so conditioned to heal, so responsive to faith. This woman alone came up and touched him, and it was her faith that triggered the healing power from Jesus. Now, verse 47, when the woman saw that she was not hidden, Jesus was still looking around and trying to find this person, looking at the faces and seeing who looks guilty. She came trembling, and falling down before him, she declared to him in the presence of all the people the reason she had touched him and how she was healed immediately. And he said to her, Daughter, be of good cheer. Your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Your faith. Faith is important. Your faith has healed you. Go in peace. Turn now to Mark chapter 5. We get the third account of this particular miracle. Mark chapter 5, and begins in verse 25. Mark 5, beginning in verse 25. Now a certain woman had a flow of blood for 12 years and had suffered many things from many physicians. And that's not uncommon. Physicians aren't miracle men. unlike Jesus, and when they decide to chop bits off and irradiate you and give you the latest concoction that some big pharmaceutical company has produced at a great price, you can suffer many things. And no doubt she'd been through a number of physicians who'd given her all sorts of great cures and had suffered a great deal, not only from her complaint but also from the physicians. And she'd spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, now what happens when you hear the word? Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. She'd heard about Jesus, she'd heard about his teaching, she'd heard about the miracles, and faith had come. Faith comes by hearing. And so she heard about Jesus, she came behind him in the crowd and touched his garment, for she said, "If only I may touch his clothes, I shall be made well." Which is a statement of faith. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And she said, she knew in her heart, if I can just touch his clothes, I will be healed. Not, I hope it might improve things a wee bit, but she wanted to touch him. That was, if you like, the extent of her faith. We'll see, not this week, but another time that, you know, one Gentile was happy for Jesus to just speak the word. That was all he wanted, just speak the word, Jesus, and you know, I believe. But the lady here, she wanted to touch Jesus' garments, and her faith was that if I can do that, I will be healed. And verse 29, immediately the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of the affliction. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that power had gone out of him, turned around in the crowd and said, "Hey, who's touched my clothes?" But his disciples said to him, "Hey, you see the multitude thronging you, and you say, 'Who touched me?' What is this, Jesus?" And of course, everybody denying it, including the lady, as we saw in that last passage. And he looked round to see her who had done this thing. But the woman, obviously recognizing she's not going to escape, fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell down before him, on her knees, I guess, and told him the whole truth. And Jesus was impressed, very much so. And he said to her, "Daughter, wow, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction." Jesus was delighted. Delighted that she was healed. Delighted with her faith. And we can see here that Jesus didn't know about it in advance. He didn't stop and inquire and get details. He didn't reach out his hand and say, you know, "Be healed," as he did, for example, with blind people and so on. The lady obtained healing by her faith without Jesus even being aware of it to begin with. And so I think we can get a good indication there that Jesus is a healer. And Jesus' healing is almost, in a sense, almost automatic if faith is there. Faith is what will trigger the healing. And Jesus, of course, responds to faith. Faith is very pleasing to the Father, very pleasing to Jesus. Hold your place there and turn to Hebrews 11. Hebrews chapter 11. And we'll read verse 6. I guess we'd all like Jesus and the Father to respond to our needs. And we go to him and say, "I've got a huge need here. I need $1 million by tomorrow night. Or my leg's about to wear off and drop off, and I need it to be healed by tomorrow." And we'd all like to just go and express our needs and complain and whinge about our needs. But it's not whinging, complaining, and begging about our needs that moves God. He's not moved by begging. He's not moved by endless pleading, repeatedly again and again and again. But he is moved by faith. Very quickly, we saw the lady there, Jesus didn't even know what she was up to, but the faith was enough to trigger healing from Jesus. Hebrews 11 verse 6, it tells us, "But without faith it is impossible to please him." And we can reverse that. With faith it pleases God. God is pleased by faith, and he is not very pleased at all without faith. Without faith it is impossible to please God. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and in addition, that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. No point going to God not expecting a response. And this lady expected. She went and she said, if I can but touch his garments, if I can push my way through the crowd, not be caught by them and sent back home because I'm unclean, if I can get to this man Jesus, the son of David, if I can touch his garments, I will be rewarded. And she was. So faith pleases God and he responds to faith. Okay, let's look now at another miracle. This is the miracle of a man with a withered hand. So we'll start in Matthew chapter 12. This appears in Matthew, Mark and Luke. So three places to go. I might finish today's allotment, possibly. Matthew 12. I've got five to look at, so I think we're number three. So we're not doing too badly, but might struggle a wee bit with the fifth one. Matthew 12, and beginning in verse 9. This is the man with the withered hand. Now when he departed from there, he went into their synagogue. And behold, there was a man who had a withered hand. Greek implies a dried out or shrunken hand. So remember the complaint was it was all sort of gnarled up and dried up and probably all sort of fixed in position. So again, not much use to you. We had a man in the church for a number of years. In fact, he was latterly an elder in the PCG who had only one hand. I'm not quite sure what happened to his other hand. Probably an accident, I guess, years ago. But he had a prosthetic hand. But although he managed, fairly well in terms of driving and opening and his Bible and so on, having one hand that operates and one that doesn't is a handicap. And this guy was handicapped. Only one working hand. The other one was all dried up, shriveled, withered away. And they asked him, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath, that they might accuse him? And he said to them, what man is there among you who has one sheep, and if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will not lay hold of it and lift it out? Of how much more value then is a man than a sheep? Therefore it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. Then he said to the man, stretch out your hand. And the man said, I can't, it's withered up and shriveled. But of course, if he'd done that, you'd go back home with a dried up, withered, shriveled hand. I can't stretch it out, Jesus, don't you see it? But you see, faith does require some corresponding action. Even though your hand is withered and shriveled, Jesus said, stretch it out. And he didn't, he might have waited for it to be healed before stretching it out. I think he'd have had a long wait. And he stretched it out, and it was restored as whole as the other. The guy took action. He sort of pushed it forward as far as he could. And as he did that, as he obeyed, as he responded to Jesus, the hand suddenly started to plump up with moisture, and the skin started to become nice and soft, and the fingers extended and became nice and pink, and it was restored as whole as the other when he responded to Jesus. Let's turn to Mark chapter 3, get some more details. And Matthew does seem to, like I say, skip over quite a few details. That becomes particularly relevant in one of the miracles we look at, because people seem to think it's contradicting other stories, but because Matthew is just so brief that he sort of telescopes things together. Let's turn to Mark chapter 3 and we'll read verses 1 through 5. And Jesus entered the synagogue again, and a man was there who had a withered hand. And they, this will be the Jewish leaders, scribes and Pharisees and all that lot, watched him closely, whether he would heal on the Sabbath, so that they might accuse him. Which really, is quite an appalling attitude. You'd think seeing a guy whose hand's been withered for who knows how long, 10 years or 20 years, being healed would be a fantastic miracle, and you'd shout and dance and send cards and greetings and buy the guy a couple of bottles of champagne. But these religious people are so mean and bitter and twisted that they just wanted an excuse to accuse Jesus. Really strange. And of course, there are no meaner people on the earth than religious people. Then he said to the man who had the withered hand, "Step forward." And he said to them, "Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill?" I guess there's a bit of a discussion here, because elsewhere they asked the question. I guess Jesus made a few comments and then reversed the question to them. Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill? But they kept silent. And when he looked round at them with anger, being grieved by the hardness of their hearts, he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." And he stretched it out, and his hand was restored as whole as the other. Now, the interesting thing here, in a sense, is that Jesus was angry. Not too many places we find it saying Jesus was angry. What was he angry at, do you think? Well, he was angry because they were really against healing. There's a man there who had a need for healing. I think it's quite likely he was expecting Jesus to do something, and perhaps he was there for that reason, and Jesus was about to heal him, and these guys really did not want Jesus to heal. And Jesus said, "Should I heal him? Is it good to heal this man, or should I just leave him?" And he knew what their answer was: leave him. He deserves it. Probably God put that on him for a reason, to teach him character. Leave him with a withered hand. And it angered Jesus that they did not want him to heal, because Jesus' disposition is to show favor, to show mercy, to show compassion, to heal. Like we saw with the lady with the issue of blood, Jesus heals even without being aware of it. So here Jesus thinks it's right to heal, it's lawful to heal, it's good to heal. There's no better day to heal than the Sabbath. And the fact that these guys are resisting healing and do not want him to heal, it angers him. They are so hard of heart, so lacking in mercy. Jesus wants to heal and they don't want him to. Let's turn to Luke chapter 6. Catch the third description. Luke chapter 6. And hopefully we can see last week and this week and next week, I imagine as well, that Jesus is not reluctant to heal. Faith has to be there 95% of the time. But Jesus wants to heal. He wanted to heal here, and he was very disappointed that these people were, in a sense, wanting the opposite. Luke chapter 6, starting in verse 6. "Now it happened on another Sabbath also that he entered the synagogue and taught. And a man was there whose right hand, we now see, was withered. And the scribes and Pharisees watched him closely," their eyes narrowed, all staring, not going to miss a trick here, "whether he would heal on the Sabbath, that they might find an accusation against him." I mean, what perverse attitude this is. But notice, they were looking for Jesus to heal. Why is that? Because Jesus had a reputation for healing. They were in the synagogue and they thought, "Hang on a second, there's a guy there who's got a withered hand. And there's Jesus over there. Withered hand and Jesus. There's going to be healing here." And that would be expected, because Jesus was the man who responded to faith, responded to requests for healing. And they could catch on pretty quickly that Jesus is so disposed to heal, he's bound to heal this man today, and it's the Sabbath. It'll break our rules. But again, it indicates that Jesus was not a reluctant healer. "But he knew their thoughts," verse 8, "and said to the man who had the withered hand, 'Arise and stand here.' And he arose and stood." And I'm pretty sure he was expectant. "Then Jesus said to them, 'I will ask you one thing. Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil, to save life or to destroy it?' And of course, we know they wouldn't answer that. And so Jesus was angry, as we read Mark. "And looking round at them all, he said to the man, 'Stretch out your hand,' and he did so." And of course it stretched out in his dried, withered state, but once he responded, then healing arrived. "And his hand was restored as whole as the other. And they were filled with delight and praised God for his glorious compassion and kindness and goodness." Well, if only. "And they were filled with rage, and discussed with one another what they might do to Jesus. You know, how can we kill him? How can we tear him apart? You know, how can we bury him? Quite incredible, the impact that Satan can have on the human mind. Okay, let's move on now to, this should be a brief one, I think. This is Peter's mother-in-law. So Matthew chapter 8, the healing of Peter's mother-in-law. Matthew chapter 8 and verse 14. Matthew 8, verse 14. Now when Jesus had come into Peter's house, he saw his wife's mother lying sick with a fever. And so we know that Peter was married. Rather naughty, since Peter was the first pope of the Roman Catholic Church, and should of course have by now taken a vow of celibacy. But Peter had in fact, incorrectly, for a pope, got married. But Jesus comes in anyway and sees Peter's wife's mother is lying sick with a fever, and he touched her hand, and the fever left her, and then she arose and served them. Pretty brief, the way that Matthew seems to cover these things. But before we leave that, let's just read verses 16 and 17. A bit of an aside, but they sort of, I think, fit into the overall view of Jesus as our healer. When evening had come, they brought to him many who were demon-possessed, and he cast out the spirits with a word and healed all who were sick. Not picking and choosing, not saying, well, I'm sorry, but, you know, really, in the big scheme of things, it's right and proper that you remain sick of your palsy or your paralysis or your leprosy or your fever. And Jesus healed all who were sick, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying, he himself took our infirmities and bore our sicknesses. Which of course he actually did do that when he was being beaten and scourged before his crucifixion. Okay, let's turn to Mark chapter 1. Mark chapter 1, and we read the same passage, verses 29-31. Now as soon as they had come out of the synagogue, this took place on a Sabbath, they entered the house of Simon, that's Simon Peter, and Andrew, with James and John. But Simon's wife's mother lay sick with a fever, and they told him about her at once. So he came, took her by the hand, Matthew said touched her, here it says took her by the hand, lifted her up, and immediately the fever left her, and she served them. Fairly straightforward. On to Luke chapter 4. Luke adds another couple of details. Luke chapter 4. And verses 38-39. Verse 38, now he arose from the synagogue and entered Simon's house. But Simon's wife's mother was sick with a high fever. You know, Luke, who was a physician and probably a decent one, says it's a high fever. I think the Amplified says in the grip of a burning fever, so you know, quite a serious fever. And they made request of him concerning her, and he said, no, it's right and proper that she suffers a bit longer to develop holy righteous character. Well, that's the way we sometimes like to treat illness. But Jesus said, oh no, hang on, take me to her. Verse 39, so he stood over her, she was lying down obviously quite poorly, and interestingly he rebuked the fever, and it left her. And immediately she arose and served them. At that point, Jesus, you know, touched her and lifted her up. But before doing that, Luke adds a detail here that Jesus stood over her and rebuked the fever. Jesus spoke to the fever. He didn't stop and lift up his eyes to heaven and pray to the Father. Jesus spoke to this fever and said, fever, get out of this woman immediately. And of course, Jesus is a good example. And Jesus was effective, and what Jesus did worked. Does that make sense? That Jesus would speak to something, in a sense, inanimate, like a fever? Fever, get, and it got? Is that something that Jesus did else other times? Something that perhaps we could look at? Well, let's turn to Mark chapter 4. Mark chapter 4. We've covered this at some length in our two series on walking by faith. So Mark chapter 4, let's begin in verse 35, to see how Jesus was quite happy to talk to almost anything, in addition to people. And of course, you know, Jesus would be, I guess, our example, unless we think we know a better way, of course. Mark chapter 4, verse 35. On the same day, when evening had come, he said to them, "Let us cross over to the other side of the Sea of Galilee." Now when they had left the multitude, they took him along in the boat, as he was, and other little boats were also with them. And a great windstorm arose. A great windstorm, I guess, you know, perhaps getting on for hurricane-type proportions. It was quite scary, to the disciples at least, and they were, several of them, experienced fishermen. And the waves beat into the boat so that it was already filling. So you're in some jeopardy here. In a boat filling up with water. And it's dark. And the wind is powerful. And squalls. And there's a rain beating down. And you can hardly see your hand in front of your nose. But he was in the stern. Worried stiff. Oh no, sorry. Asleep on a pillow. And he awoke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" Which of course would be probably the worst thing you could say to Jesus. "Don't you care for me, Jesus?" But that's what they said anyway. "Oh, we're drowning out here and you're asleep. What's the matter with you? Don't you care about us?" And he arose and rebuked the wind. Oh, Jesus, even on magic mushrooms or something, you can't talk to the wind. That's just wind. But Jesus, it says, rebuked the wind. He rebuked the fever in Simon Peter's mother-in-law. He rebuked the wind and he said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And of course it made no difference, and the sea kept up. No. And the wind ceased and there was a great calm because Jesus spoke words of faith, and the wind stopped and the sea calmed down and everything was well. And he said to them, "I understand why you were so..." No, that's not it either. "Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith?" Now, Jesus was not impressed in the slightest by these guys. He said, "You've been with me all this time, and I've explained to you, and I've shown you. Why did you..." I can't understand this. "Why have you got no faith?" And they feared exceedingly and said to one another, "Who can this be that even the wind and the sea and, of course, fevers obey him?" Let's turn to Matthew 21. Matthew chapter 21. Because obviously only Jesus can do this sort of thing, can't he? It's only for Jesus, because he's the Son of God and he can do this sort of thing. He can talk to fevers, he can talk to the sea and the waves, but you and I obviously can't. That would be very foolish. Matthew chapter 21, beginning in verse 18. "Now in the morning, as he returned to the city of Jerusalem, he was hungry. And seeing a fig tree by the road, he came to it and found nothing on it but leaves, and said to it..." Oops. What said to a fig tree? "Let no fruit grow on you ever again." So I guess we could say he rebuked the fig tree. So he rebuked a fever. He rebuked the wind and the sea. And here's Jesus rebuking a fig tree at the side of the road. "And immediately the fig tree withered away." Probably from the roots up, because it was actually the next day that the disciples saw it. "But when the disciples saw it, they marveled, saying..." Just a minute. How did the fig tree wither away so soon? I mean, they'd heard Jesus speaking. It tells that in Mark's version, that they heard him speaking to a tree and probably, nudging each other. "Oh, no. Look what he's doing now. He's talking to a tree. What is the matter with this guy? Remember, the kingdom be set up and he's talking to trees and things." Dear, dear, dear. Particularly, I guess, Judas Iscariot, I think he's lost it now. He's talking to trees. What next? "So Jesus answered and said to them, Assuredly I say to you, only I can do these things because I'm the Son of God. Don't you try it." Or what he actually said was, "Assuredly I say to you, if you have faith and do not doubt, you will not only do what was done to the fig tree," in other words, speak to it and it'll wither, "but also if you say to this mountain, be removed and be cast into the sea, it will be done. So Jesus said plainly there, if you do what I just did, if you speak to a tree, or even if you speak to the mountain, it will obey you. Let's turn to Luke chapter 17. Luke chapter 17. Verses 5 and 6. And the apostles said to the Lord, increase our faith. And the Lord said, if you have faith as a mustard seed, you can say to this mulberry tree, be pulled up by the roots and be planted in the sea, and it would obey you. He's not saying this is something that he only could do. Jesus said, look, boys, if you had faith, you could say to this mulberry tree. If you had faith, you could say to this mountain. Jesus rebuked fevers. He rebuked the wind and the sea. Jesus spoke words of faith. Now, we've covered that, like I said, at some length in another couple of series, so I won't spend any more time on that. But interesting that the miracle of Peter's mother-in-law being miraculously healed was an example of Jesus talking to things, as you and I are instructed to do. Okay, I think we can just race through the next one, which is the Gentile woman's daughter. So we turn to Mark chapter 7, first of all. Only two references here, Mark and then Matthew, but also a couple of other ancillary scriptures. So Mark chapter 7, and beginning in verse 24, this is the Gentile woman's daughter, or if you prefer, the Syrophoenician, but that's also rather hard to spell. So I'm making life easy for you. Mark 7, verse 24. And from there he arose and went to the region of Tyre and Sidon. And he entered a house and wanted no one to know it, but he could not be hidden. So he got right out of his normal territory into Gentile country, into a house, and hopefully a bit of peace and quiet, need time to, you know, renew his spiritual batteries, need a bit of time to sort of ponder and think of the next few steps, need a time to assemble his thoughts and perhaps some private time with the disciples. But it was hard for Jesus ever to hide. He was just so well known, and people were so hungry to hear, and in particular to receive healing and so on. But anyway, verse 25, a woman whose young daughter had an unclean spirit heard about him, and she came and fell at his feet. The woman was a Greek, a Syrophoenician by birth, and she kept asking him to cast the demon out of her daughter. And of course, many demons did cause physical illness. There were deaf and dumb spirits. There were epileptic spirits. And one lady was bent over and twisted for many years, caused by a demon. So in this case, it doesn't tell us exactly what the complaint was, but she was seriously demonized, and probably in some way suffering a physical ailment or complaint because of that. And she kept asking Jesus, you know, and we'll see in the next sort of version that Jesus by and large ignored her. But Jesus said to her, you know, laterally, let the children be filled first, for it is not good to take the children's bread and to throw it to the little dogs. And she answered and said to him, yes, Lord, yet even the little dogs under the table eat from the children's crumbs. You know, the puppies can play around the kids' table, and when things fall off the table, the little puppies gobble them up. And he said to her, oh, wow. For this saying, go your way. The demon has gone out of your daughter. And when she had come to her house, she found the demon gone out and her daughter lying on the bed. Well, obviously, quite peaceful. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 15. Matthew chapter 15, starting in verse 21. Matthew 15, 21. Then Jesus went out from there, from his normal sort of territory, and departed to the region of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a woman of Canaan came from that region and cried out to him, saying, have mercy on me, O Lord, son of David. Interesting she'd use that expression, because she was a Gentile, a Canaanite. my daughter is severely demon-possessed. And only guess what the word severely implies there, but I guess a pretty bad attack, and perhaps very seriously ill. She's severely demon-possessed. But he answered her not a word. Here's a woman. She's desperately keen to have her little daughter healed of this demon possession and its effect. And Jesus, the compassionate Lord Jesus, answers her not a word. Aha! So proof at last that Jesus does not always heal. Proof at last that Jesus sometimes says, no, it's right and proper that your daughter remains ill and sick and diseased and demonized, because that's just the way I am. You know, sometimes I heal and sometimes I don't. Thing is, you see, lady, you just never know what God's going to do. Oh, okay, and she goes home. Well, nothing like that whatsoever. Jesus answered her not a word. Why is that? Because she has no rights to the healing. She is a Gentile. She is a stranger and a foreigner to the covenants, and only under covenant can you have any access to God. Let's turn to Romans chapter 9. Romans chapter 9, and just cut into the thought slightly to save a bit of time. Romans chapter 9, Paul's talking about how sometimes he's frustrated or very concerned about the Israelites, and particularly the Jewish people. Verse 4, who are Israelites, to whom pertain the adoption, the glory, the covenants, the giving of the law, the service of God, and the promises. They belong to the Israelites. The covenants and the promises belong to Israel. God does not dispense his promises outside of a covenant. Israel had rights under the covenant to God's promises and blessings, and you and I are in a covenant with God. That's how we access the promises, the blessings. God is making a new covenant, and ultimately with the whole earth. And unless you're in the covenant, you have no rights. Let's turn to Ephesians chapter 2. And this lady was a Canaanite, a Gentile. She had no rights to call upon Jesus. Ephesians chapter 2, reading verses 11 and 12. And Paul's writing to a group of people who were predominantly a Gentile background, uncircumcised, and he says, therefore remember that you Ephesians, once upon a time Gentiles in the flesh, verse 12, that at that time, right, before you were called, before you were baptized, before you were brought into covenant with God and became a seed of Abraham, before that, at that time you were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel, strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope, and without God in the world. If you're not an Israelite by birth, or an Israelite by being adopted, so to speak, into the family of Abraham, if you're not a descendant of Abraham by accepting Jesus, you are alien and foreigner from the promises, from the covenants of promise. So I keep meaning to do a series on covenants, because they are quite important. And of course, at Passover we take the wine, being the symbol of the blood of the new covenant. Covenants are not a shallow thing, they are very deep, very important. And you and I, if we understood, I guess, better how covenants worked, we might be better able to gain the benefits of covenant. But getting back anyway to Matthew chapter 15, verse 22, behold, a woman of Canaan, who was a stranger from Israel, an alien from the covenants, without Christ, without hope, without God, an alien from the covenants of promise. She could not come to Jehovah Rapha, God the healer, because Jehovah Rapha is a covenant name, as it happens. So she came to Jesus and said, Jesus, please, son of David, please heal my daughter of her severe demon possession. And Jesus, no, I can't do that, because she is no covenant. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, "Send her away, for she cries out after us." You know, she's following us, and she's shouting and causing a sort of a rumpus, and she's an embarrassment to us. "Send her away, Jesus, please, get rid of her, do something." But he answered and said, "I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. I've been sent to come to the house of Israel. It's my job, my task, to teach them, to educate them, to feed them, to give them the bread that belongs to the children, among which would be healing." And she came and worshipped him, saying, "Lord, help me." Now, she was persistent. And like the lady with the issue of blood and others, the blind men, she took action. She did not turn around and go home again. She kept on going. She showed a tremendous example of persistence. And he answered and said, "Look, lady, it is not good to take the children's bread," which is what healing is in this context, "and throw it to the little dogs. You want me to heal you, but that belongs to the children of Israel. That belongs to the people I'm sent to. I'm sent to Israel. That's, you know, my audience. That's the ones that I can't take the benefits under the covenant which belong to the children of Israel and throw them out to little dogs." And she said, "True, Lord, true. Yeah, Lord, even little dogs get to eat the crumbs which fall from their master's table." Now, she's being extremely humble here. She's not saying, "Oh, you toffee-nosed Jew, clear off." You know, she says, "Well, yes, Lord. I know that you're the son of David. I know that you're here to feed the children of Israel. I understand exactly what you're saying, but Jesus, son of David, even little puppy dogs can gobble up the odd crumb that spills off the table of the children." And she said, "Oh, woman, great is your faith. Let it be to you as you desire." And her daughter was healed from that very hour. See, Jesus, in a sense, although he couldn't feel like healing her under the covenant, he couldn't resist the faith, could he? Verse 20, "Oh, woman." Jesus was impressed by faith. Next week, I guess, we'll cover the centurion's faith, that Jesus just stopped astonished and said, "I've never come across faith like this man's." Jesus, what we read in Hebrews earlier, without faith it's impossible to please God. With faith, God is absolutely delighted. And Jesus just stood there, probably in mild astonishment, just thought, "Oh, wow. You know, I struggle at times to teach this bunch behind me, Peter and James and John and all the rest of them, who are scared of sinking in the sea because they've got no faith. And here's this Gentile lady who has great faith." And so Jesus responded to her faith and said, "Oh, woman, great is your faith. Impressive. I am impressed. I am delighted. I am pleased. Let it be to you as you desire." And her daughter was healed from that very hour. So I think we can see there that, you know, the only example you can find of Jesus being a little bit resistant to heal someone is because the person actually had got no legal right to be healed. She was not under a covenant. She had no covenant with the Creator God. She was a Gentile, and I think history shows that the Canaanites were into some pretty extreme practices in terms of paganism and other things, and so she had no legal right, but Jesus was so impressed by her faith that he responded. So Jesus, you find time and time and time again, always will heal. He's disposed to heal, and he's the same yesterday and today and forever. Well, okay, brethren, that will conclude our look at, I think, 5 instances today of specific miracles. So next week we'll carry on and hopefully get through another 5 or so. And with that, we will close the Bible study.